Hey, it's Dario.
And Chris.
Of the Refined Taste Podcast, and we want to tell you about an awesome comedy show we're hosting at Crisp on March 7th at 7:30.
This show features some of the best comedians in the area and beyond, and of course, Crisp's delicious menu available all night.
Tickets are available on eventbrite.com, and as a thank you for listening to a show on the Lunchador Podcast Network, use promo code PODFAM for $5 off tickets. That's PODFAM at checkout on eventbrite.com, and we'll see you at the show.
Game over, man. Game over.
Masters of couch potato style, punches and popcorn.
Rapid strike.
I ain't got time to breathe.
Welcome back, Punchy Pals. We've got a special Rapid Strike bonus episode for you. During our conversation with legendary Hong Kong film historian Frank Zhang for our Yes Madam episode, we took some time to talk with Frank about his background, his love of movies, his incredible commentary work, and his exciting projects ahead. Frank Zhang has been creating film commentaries since the Laserdisc days for physical media labels such as Severin Films, 88 Films, Arrow Video, and the Criterion Collection, amongst others. Recently, Frank has jumped into the filmmaking side of the business, working as a producer on the upcoming documentary Enter the Clones of Bruce, exploring the world of Bruceploitation cinema. We're excited to share our interview with Frank here in this special bonus episode. Enjoy, and make sure you check out our Yes Madam episode with Frank if you haven't already. All right, we are here with a very honored guest today, kung fu historian, expert, genius, the man of a thousand commentaries, the legendary Frank Zhang. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
You know, my wife was laughing while you were saying that. She's giving me the yeah, right look, you know.
And it's
well, it, thank you for that, though. I'm honored to be here. Yes, yeah.
Well, we're so happy to hear you or have you here. I mean, I feel like I've heard you so much. To me, I think if I go and just pick any movie randomly off my shelf, there's a good chance if it's got a commentary, you're on it. So, again, and just beyond honor that you're here talking with us. But I really wanted to know, besides the guy that gives us all this wonderful information, I wanted to know a little bit more about you and how you got to be this guy. So I'm really interested, I guess, to start with and knowing, you know, I assume just like us, you're a guy who loves movies and loves these movies. I'm kind of interested from, you know, an early age, or really what drove your passion for movies, or what were kind of the movies that really captured your interest?
I kind of have my mom to thank because she loved movies. Uh-huh. And when we were kids, she would actually take us, me and my sisters, to go see movies. I still remember my first movie was Gone with the Wind. She took us to see Gone with the Wind. And later on, she would take us to see like Sound of Music, you know, other classics that she wanted to see, you know, like, you know, basically any movie that she wanted to see, she'd take us to go see it. Uh-huh. And so, you know, that kind of just cemented my love for movies at a very young age. And then, you know, at that time, you know, the TV station in Hong Kong will also show movies on like Sunday afternoon. You know, they show, they will show Taiwanese films actually on Sunday afternoons. And that kind of helped me learn Mandarin because, you know, obviously Hong Kong being a Cantonese speaking city, but then while I was watching those Mandarin films, I was like, oh, okay, because they have those burning subtitles already. So I was like, these words are like pronounced like that in Mandarin. So that somehow, I somehow learned Mandarin that way. So I got help. And then they will always show like those old Cantonese black and white movies and late night, almost every night. So, you know, that's how I kind of just started watching movies. And as I grew a little bit older, I want to go see movies on my own. I would try to see Shaw Brothers movies, but almost every time I would just got rejected at the box office. They just said, kid, you're too young. You know, these films are not
been there.
You know, I want to go see Cripple Avengers or go see like Thursday Chimney Shaolin. No, you cannot see those. The only movie that I ended up seeing was Inframan, you know, Super Inframan.
Danny
Lee, Bruce Lee film. Uh-huh. You know, that was suitable for children.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, like, I want to go see Mighty Peking Man.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They wouldn't let me see Mighty Peking Man because there's nudity in it, I guess.
Right, right.
And yet, I went to see King Kong, the Jeff Bridges one. You know,
oh, yeah, that's, yeah. I mean.
Lang, no problem. They let me. Interesting. So, but anyway, so as I grew a little bit older, I started going to see movies on my own and then also with my, you know, classmates. Okay. So I'll be seeing both Hong Kong films and Hollywood films. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of like movie watching just kind of became kind of like a staple for me. And then after I came over here to the US, I would just go to Chinatown theaters and watch movies every weekend, even when I was in college. You know, when I was in college, my college is like an hour's drive away from the Bay Area. So every weekend, I would just drive back out and go see movies. So that actually went on for at least, I mean, that like good 6-7 years at least, you know.
Wow.
So I was catching all the major, you know, movies coming out from Hong Kong at the time in the 80s and 90s, all the classics, you know, Aces Go Places, you know, Fire, Bright White Hair, you name it. So I was doing it throughout the 80s and like early to mid 90s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's how I, you know, yeah. But I like I said, it really kind of started with my mom taking us to go see Gone with the Wind. That kind of cemented all of it.
That's good. Now, did your mom enjoy or ever watch any of the Shaw Brothers movies?
Oh, no, not the Shaw. No. Go see the Shaw Brothers. I mean, like I said, I couldn't go see them. So,
right.
But who would go see like the Hoy Brothers comedy films? You know, because yeah. You know, the Michael Hoy, Sam Hoy's films, those are very
yeah.
popular. You know, The Private Eyes, Security Unlimited, The Contract, you know, those are all, you know, huge hits at that time. So we would go see
them.
And then, of course, later on, I would go see the Jackie Chan stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Spiritual Kung Fu, Young Master. But by then, I think I already started seeing them either with my dad or myself, you know.
Right.
Definitely like Sioux Warriors. I went to see Sioux Warriors by myself. So
yeah.
By you know, my early teen years, I would just start go seeing movies on my own. So.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So how did you make the jump from the being a guy like us that just loves these movies, watches them to becoming like an authority, an expert, like being able to now participate in them, whether it's through commentaries or.
Well, we got to first have to go back to the 90s first because, you know, I always enjoy being in the library. And so actually, you know, my original career plan was to become a librarian. Mm-hmm. And I was actually working full time in the library in the mid 90s, you know, after college.
Yeah.
I was working full time in the library, at a public library. And a friend of mine who works at Tai Seng, she's like a huge, you know, HR guy, HR person.
Yeah.
At Tai Seng. And Tai Seng, of course, at that time, the largest distributor of Hong Kong program, you know, the TV and movie programs in the US. Because I she's a friend of a friend.
Right, right.
And she was like kind of like lamenting to my friend that, oh, you know, we've been trying to hire this person for the English department. They're trying to expand it to the English speaking audiences and they're having a hard time finding somebody. Mm-hmm. And then of course my friend remember me. Said, well, you know, let me ask Frank. Maybe he's interested.
Yeah.
So when she approached me about this job opening, yeah, I said, okay, sure, I'll apply for it. Mm-hmm. So I went to apply for it. Didn't hear for it for like 2 months. I got so mad that I actually called him and said, well, you know, are you going to hire me or not? Because I haven't. I hate not hearing back from somebody.
Right, right.
Said, well, yeah, we're still deciding, but you're like the top cat. What are the top candidate? And then about a week after I called them, they offered me the job, which is actually a lower paid job than my library job because obviously library being a city job, you know,
right,
pay okay. So this is actually a lower paid job, but I thought, well, you know, this is probably the one and only chance for me to kind of promote Hong Kong cinema to English-speaking audiences. So I actually took the job, which is, you know, a lot of people thought I was crazy. It's like, you know, you were working at the city where you live, and now you accept a lower pay job,
right,
all the way in South San Francisco, which means an hour's drive every day. It's like, you're nuts. But, you know, I'm glad I did because, you know, it really kind of opened my eyes. And also, you know, I ended up working for 12 years, you know, doing a lot of these remaster titles on Laserdisc and eventually DVD and finally Blu-ray, you know. So no, it was a great experience. It was like long hours, man. I mean, like, it was like, we're talking about like sometimes 12 hours days, you know.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah. OT. You don't get overtime pay. I mean, Asian country, you're kidding, you know. But yeah, I stayed there for 12 years, you know, and that was actually a pretty good experience. And I, you know, it was because of the decline of the market, you know, thanks to bootlegging, and also because of all these American studios buying all these titles, you know, Miramax, oh, right, and Sony. And so Tyson was, you started to have a hard time getting good titles. Mm-hmm. And so sales kind of started to diminish, you know, especially after 9/11. We're just not getting quality films, you know.
Right.
And also because, you know, my parents were, you know, their health was kind of declined. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know what, maybe it's time for me to kind of just come back to, like, you know, work, find a job in my own city where I'm, you know, where I can spend more time with my parents. So that's why I left Taizang, you know, after 12 years. But okay. I was still working for them, you know, on the side. I was still doing subtitle translations for them. I did a couple of other commentaries at that time. So, but then, of course, with Taizang eventually going under, that kind of, and, you know, my involvement in Hong Kong cinema kind of ended.
Right.
Until I started, you know, doing this thing with Severin Films and the Bruxploitation documentary. You know, they approached me to they wanted someone to help them find a talent in Hong Kong, and they, you know, I was suggested to them. Okay. And not long after I started doing this project, Eureka, you know, the UK label,
yeah,
started looking for me. The reason was they were doing the John Woo box set, which has Last Hurrah for Chivalry.
Okay.
And I wrote a liner note for the Taizang release on Laserdisc.
Okay.
And then they wanted to reprint it. They just thought it was a nice little piece. They want to reprint it, but they obviously need permission from me. So, right. So they start looking for me, but apparently they couldn't, for whatever reason, couldn't find me. they've been trying to look for me for almost a year, and they couldn't find me. And they finally reached out to, I know, they finally reached out to David, you know, David Gregory of Severin Films, mm-hmm, you know, because David's also British, and, you know, so. And they know that David was based in U.S., so they said, hey, you know, you think you can find this guy? And then David said, well, lo and behold, he's helping me. So, you know, he put me in touch with Eureka, and then I said, sure, you know, I mean, of course, you can reprint the Laserdisc. And then after they did that, they said, hey, we'd be interested in doing commentaries. And because they were doing the Sammo Hung box set.
Oh, yeah.
And Monk, Ethan Condor, and Magnificent Butcher.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. And they said Mike Leader has already committed to two of them, Eastern Condors and Madison Butcher.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, he doesn't want to do Iron Fist the Monk. And he said, we'd be interested in doing Iron Fist the Monk. I said, sure. But I noticed you're also doing Eastern Condors, which is my favorite Sammo Hung film. I said, can you let me do another commentary for Eastern Condors and I'll do it for free? And
they said, wow.
But anyway, I first did Iron Fist of Monk, and I thought I did a piss poor job. I thought I did a terrible job. But they said it's fine. They liked it. And then they did Condor, and they liked it even more. And they just said, well, you know, we want you to do commentaries on all of our future Hong Kong titles. So that's how it got started.
Yeah.
Right. And so how long ago was that started? Was,
oh, God, 4 or 5 years ago, I think. 2017, maybe. 2017, mm-hmm. 2018. Yeah, it's probably around 2017, 2018.
Okay.
And then about a year after I started doing the commentary for Eureka, ADA Films started contacting me. They were about to release Forbidden City Cop, the Stephen Chow film.
Okay. And
the person who they originally asked to do bailed out for whatever reason. Then they asked me, would I be interested? And I said, sure, Stephen Chow, of course, you know. So I did it, and they liked it, and they said, we want to do more. And then so that's how I gradually started doing commentary for other labels. And, of course, you know, after that, Arrow started contacting me, Vinegar Syndrome, Criterion, and so forth. So that's how it kind of got started, yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So some of the – so when you were with – and remind me, because the label that you were with before – you kind of went back into the library world before Eureka contacted you. You said you were doing some, it's like some translations and commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of those commentaries from those movies like still exist and have made their way onto?
Yeah, I did a couple. they're on DVD, like Cow on a Mission. I mean, these are all of them are non-Kung Fu titles. I did like three of them, I think. Cow on a Mission, and there's a Leon Lai film that I even forgot the name. I mean, yeah, I remember it was a pain in the ass. You know, I remember it was a bunch. It took me a month to do it. I mean, it was actually the Tai Seng's general manager who wanted me to do it because they're seeing how other labels are doing audio commentary. They said, well, you want to try to do audio commentary? So that's how I started doing it. And I remember it was not fun. It was just like, oh my God, all this research. No, little do I know now. You know, oh gosh. But yeah, that's how I got kind of. So that's why when they asked me, when Eureka asked me to do commentary, I was actually a little bit hesitant because I remember how, you know, I mean, because like I said, the experience I had on doing commentary for the two Tai Seng titles weren't that pleasant. It was just very time consuming, you know.
Right.
But I think, okay, I'll just try it, you know, and then that, you know, it just got better, you know. I mean, I think by doing so many now, I feel that I actually improved quite a bit, you know.
Do you think it's gotten better because your experience with it is better? Or do you think you've kind of changed the way that you approach the movies that's made it better?
I just think it's because I've done so many. Mm-hmm. I did 67 last year.
67
last year.
How long did it take to do a typical one?
I think at least 10 so far this year. So,
oh, man.
But I mean, I just think it's because I've done so many. Like, you know, practice makes perfect. Mm-hmm. And also, I've kind of like gotten better at reducing the time it takes for me to do research. You know, before it takes me like 3 to 4 weeks to do research on just one title. Mm-hmm. Now I don't. I'm sorry. Now I don't have that luxury.
Right.
You know, I've done commentary where I did research in a day or two. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. What's the research involved?
Yeah, because. Yeah, yeah. What kind of research involved? You mean?
Yeah, because the librarian background. Like, what do you? How do you dive into that?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, thanks to my library background, I was able to like find stuff. You know, like I think the main thing that I try to differentiate my commentary from others is I look for anything about the film in Chinese, like Chinese articles, Chinese interviews.
Oh, yeah.
I think those are good stuff that Westerners couldn't have access to.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, but absolutely not.
And try to include those. Like, you know, sometimes you have some trivia that the star or the Italian would tell the Chinese interviewer, but not to the Western interviewer. Or some, you know, other articles about the film, like some, you know, like some tidbits or production tidbits that, again, you know, you may not find in an English, you know, article. So those are my main thing. So yeah, I mean, when I started research on the film, I always look for the Chinese article first, then I'll go to the English ones, and then of course the cast and stuff. But you know, because I've done so many, I kind of build up this steady library of talents, and cast and crew. So now it's a bit easier for me to find information on some of the actors. I can just go to this and there. But like I told you before, we started this interview. You know, I'm gradually minimizing the time I will spend on doing the bios of the, you know, yeah, this actor, the director. It's just because, you know, some people will find it boring now because they've listened to so many of those. So, but yeah, I mean, just
crazy.
Yeah, practice is perfect. Yeah, yeah, as you do more, kind of, you know, you gotta get the flow. You know, like you kind of improve the flow. You kind of know what the flow is, and that kind of makes it a little bit easier. And also, the fact that I do some of these with a partner, that helps me a lot because. Yeah. With a partner, the time it takes to do research is minimized considerably because obviously I have to leave some space for them to talk.
Yeah, so right.
I can't do 20 pages of notes now. I, you know, when I have a partner, so I would kind of like cut that, you know, maybe in half or one third, what have you. And then I always leave space to make sure that I, you know, my commentary partner will have time to talk. You know, I mean, if you listen to the ones I do, the joint commentary, you notice I really don't like cutting them off. So whenever they speak, you notice I just shut up, let them talk. even if they're talking over scenes that I need to cover. But then, like, now I know, okay, I can always say, you know, on the previous scenes. So again, practice makes perfect. And you know, I just love, to the point where, I've improved my gear, you know, like the first, you know, the early commentary I did on my iPhone. That's it. I just
really?
Yeah, just, you know, straight to my iPhone using the iTalk thing. And then,
wow,
you know, as I realized, oh my God, all these workloads coming in, I got to kind of like up my game, you know, and like, and also to is kind of like way of respecting the people who's giving me these jobs. Like, you know, right. Well, they trust me enough to let me do these. I should really kind of give some kind of a respect by recording them in better quality. You know, so I started investing in, nice microphone, all that stuff. You know, so now I'm, everything all set up. And that also makes the recording so much easier, because before, just with the phone, it's hard. But now, with everything set up on a desktop, it almost makes things much easier just to do the recording now, So again, that helps. Yeah, so.
Now, do you approach, when you do the commentary, is it like I don't know anything about how these get made, like, is it really like we're experiencing it listening? Are you just watching it and commenting through, or do you find like you do segments here and there, or it's kind of you prepare and when it's time to record, you're walking through this movie, start to finish and then that's it?
Yeah, start to finish. No, I don't know. I mean, before, like in the early, some of the earliest commentary, actually you have to do them in pieces. Due to the dev, I record them in like 5 segments, and Minutes Express, it was like 5 segments. And then the labels kind of tell me we kind of prefer one file.
Sure.
Because obviously they need to add, like if I give them separate files, they have to edit them and stuff, have a time consuming.
Right.
And also like the spontaneous feel of doing it as if I'm doing a live commentary. So it's always live, from start to finish. Even with sometimes with errors and like coughs and or like I did a funny thing was I recently did one for China O'Brien for Eureka. Oh,
yeah.
And while I was talking, China O'Brien is kind of like a Western. So I was trying to come up, I was referring to Western film. And I was talking about Clint Eastwood Westerns. And I remember I was referring to like Unforgiven, Pale Rider. And there was one film that I really wanted to refer, but somehow the name eludes me. Uh-huh. And so there's like, I was just saying like while I was recording, I'm trying to remember the name. And if I remember it, High Plains Drifter. Yeah, that's all. But I guess they liked it. It's like, I like that. That's natural. It's almost it's like a child. So, I try to make it. I think my purpose of my commentary is to make it informative yet not academic. I don't want it to be a boring commentary. Although some who kind of likes the Mike Leader, Arnold Venema kind of bantering kind of comedy will still find my commentary kind of boring. But I my feel is like I'm like my, the style of my commentary is like a friend of yours who want to. To grab you, put you on the chair, say, look, you got to watch this movie, and I'm going to tell you why this movie. So,
that's
my approach. Yeah, that's my approach to commentary. And again, like I said, when I do joint commentary, sure, I try not to cut off my partner, let them speak. And, it's a sharing thing. It's also it's a part of sharing. And so, I've done so many now. It's almost, I don't want to say it's clockwork because I also, I'm also kind of like a perfectionist. I want to make sure everything's covered in my commentary.
Yes.
Sometimes I kind of kick myself and when I forget something afterwards and I should have mentioned this and stuff, but it is what it is. But I just try to do my best on every single commentary that I record.
Oh, yeah. I remember Jason said to us once in one of our episodes, we were talking about commentaries and how much we love them. And Jason had said where it clicked for, I can't remember, it was for one of your friends, said that like, a good commentary is like you're sitting in the room with the, whether it's the director or the, whoever's doing the commentary and it's just talking about this movie. And and I remember just when Jason said that to me, like that really kind of clicked for me. I was like, oh yeah, that's what I really love about these. And it's so like, even just again, as I said, you're probably on any number of movies that I own, like all week, I'm just like listening to the commentaries, listening to, whether it's In the Line of Duty or Lady Whirlwind or something. I'm like, that's why it's awesome to talk to you because I hear all that. There's part of me that's like, oh yeah, I know Frank. Like I listen to him all the time. He taught me all about these.
Exactly.
Guys,
right.
So. And I also try to lately I also try to add a lot of cinematic terms to it. I want people to learn a bit about the way they shoot these films, I want to add a little more like now we'll mention more like Dutch angles, double exposure, that sort of thing, so people know what I'm talking about. Because from the start I would say the under cranking slow motion shot, that's easy, but like on Kung Fu Cold Master I talk specifically, I talk about like step printing, why I like step printing, where that came from and stuff. So I also my main point is to kind of educate people on some of these film techniques that they were using. You know, a lot of I think there's this misconception. These like these are cheaply made films, low budget, cheaply made. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, maybe they're cheaply made, but still, they put a lot of heart into it. And especially, you have people like Johnny Toe. These are really, I mean, they learned their craft. They were using their craft in their film. So, you know, I mean, so what if PTU is a low budget film that it took him 3 years to make? It's still, it's still a visionary piece, you know? And so I try to point that out, like his use of spotlights and all that jazz. So,
yeah, I love
to let people know. I mean, I'm trying to kind of erase the misconception of these being not like, you know, not as respect. I mean, not as admirable as they are, not equivalent to like your Hollywood film or European films. I think some of them, many of them, they're actually the equal, you know, like,
absolutely.
Look at King Wu film. I mean, come on. King Wu film, they're all masterpieces. In fact, I'm about to do a commentary on another King Wu film. I'm very honored. I'm so honored that I was asked to do a King Wu film. So I can't wait to, you know, do that.
Oh, that's really cool. You mentioned, and I know I've heard on some of your record, you've been able to kind of meet and in some cases do commentary with some of the stars of these movies, the people that made them.
Right.
You know, in Yes, Madam, you had some really great focus segments with Cynthia Rothrock. I'm interested in knowing from someone that grew up watching these movies, you know, have there, what have been maybe some of the people that you've been able to meet? Whether it's doing a commentary or just your work here, that's really has been like a, man, this is like a bucket list item for me.
Definitely. I mean, I met Rothrock back all the way back in the 90s. She did the Writing Wrong commentary for the Tai Sing Laserdisc, and that was the first time I met her. And back then, it's like she's amazing. You know, she did that whole commentary without notes. She just went to the studio, sat down, and just talked from beginning to end without notes, nothing, no preparation. And that's a lot. Right. And I'm so glad that we were able to include it on the, you know, on the ADA films, you know, the Blu-ray. But yeah, no, I mean, it's just been a pleasure work, like doing commentary with people who were involved in the film. Like, you know, Vincent Lin was great. You know, Ronnie Yu was fantastic. You know, Ronnie, you know, I worked with Ronnie on three titles now, I think. Four because, you know, also Eureka. Well, you know, Tyson, we did Bright White Hair and Phantom Lover. And then Eureka, we did Bright White Hair. And then, of course, I did Postman Fights Back with him on ADA Film. I mean, yeah, he's fantastic. And I know him since the Tyson days. So he's great. Vincent Lin's fantastic. And lately, I just did a commentary for Black Cat 2 with Robin Shaw. He's a goofball. That commentary for Black Cat 2 is worth the price of the Blu-ray alone, I guarantee. it's just always good to have somebody involved in making the film to do the commentary, so I can actually ask them about, you know, like, what were you, you know, how was this shot, like, you know, were you injured and all this. I mean, it just kind of add an additional level of intimacy to the whole commentary, so that, you know, you kind of experience what it's like to make that film, you know, with somebody who's actually involved with the production.
Yeah, it's so cool to just get that picture into how this was made, what happened there. So now you've made kind of the jump, not just commentated, but you've, with your recent project, Enter the Clones of Bruce Lee, you're in the producer's chair, right?
I'm one of the producers, yes.
Yeah, so how did you make, I'm really interested, how did you make that leap into now produce, now you're making a film?
Yeah, well, like, come to be? Like I said, Severin Films approached me. They wanted to do the documentary, but they needed someone to help them find the talent in Hong Kong. So they approached me, and then they gave me kind of this list. I look at this, oh my god, like, you want these people? Like, some big names on them. So I said, well, I'll try. I mean, I do have like people in Hong Kong that I know that maybe can help, and we were able to get maybe like 80% of the people on the list. I mean, obviously some like Jackie Chan and Yuen Biao is really kind of hard to get. You know, we got Sam Hong, so I'm very happy.
Yeah. Holy cow.
And also we set out to get all four, like there were like four major Bruce Lee clones,
actors. Right.
we set, you know, that was our goal to get all four clones. And there's no point of making the family if we don't get all four of them.
Right.
We were lucky enough to get three out of four from the get-go.
Nice.
It took us 7 years to finally get the fourth one to agree to be interviewed. Wow. That's why this documentary took 7 years to make. We started in 2016.
Wow. Holy cow.
We started interviewing people in 2016. By now, five of the people that we interviewed in the film has already passed away.
Oh man. Wow. But it's awesome that you were able to record, get to talk with them and record that. So we have that.
Yeah. Like Roy Horan's gone. You know, Philip Cole is gone. And then Terry Levine just passed away recently. And then there's two Frenchmen on that documentary who, you know, also passed away. But yeah, no, it was we said we're not gonna finish. I mean, we're not gonna give up, but you know, until we get that last person. And we kept on pushing and pushing it for 6 years. You know, we first approached him in early 2017. We actually met him in person. You know, me and my wife. My wife is also a co-producer. We tried to convince him. We tried to convince him for an hour to do it. He kept saying later, for whatever reason. He didn't say no. See, that's the thing. He didn't say no. Like, there are people like, you know, Michael Chan that outright said no. You know, Danny Lee, you know. But with this guy, he didn't say no. He just said later. So we just kept on waiting. Every few months we ask him. And then COVID came and all that stuff. And then finally, in the beginning of last year, we kind of said, you know what? We got to, you know, it's like David, you know, the director said, you know what, we should kind of wrap this up now because it's been too long.
Yeah.
So we're going to do one final attempt. We're going to send him the clip where we would have included had he said no, like he not be. We send him that clip, brilliant. 5 minutes, like, this is what we have here. If you're not going to be in this. So this is what we have about you. He watched it. He liked it. And he finally said yes. And then,
nice.
Yeah. And then it worked out.
I like that.
And it was crazy too, because by the time he said yes, Tribeca has agreed to show it for as a world premiere. You know, we're going to have a world premiere in Tribeca. And so we have maybe a month to, we didn't have a month. We have 2 weeks. So
really?
We flew to Hong Kong. Yeah, we flew to Hong Kong, interview him. And then David were in Hong Kong for less than 48 hours. We shot the interview. We edited it remember I have to translate it too, right? Because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have to translate it. So like, we knew exactly, I mean, well, the editor knows exactly what's, you know, what they need. So from interviewing him to translating it, editing it, and put it back to the film within 2 weeks. Because Tribeca's deadline was like March 30th. So we did the interview like March 14th. So we did that within 2 weeks, and then we sent it to Tribeca. And that's it. And actually, the funny thing is we're still tinkering with it. Like the final version on the Blu-ray will be slightly different from what we've shown in the film festival. I mean, the content is still the same, but it will have like better graphics. The graphics will be better. I think some archival clips will be a little bit better, but other than that, it's still the exact same film.
Oh, that's cool.
It's amazing that even after we already premiered it, show it in various festivals, you know, David is still tinkering with it. I mean, that just shows how much he cares about it, you know.
And I think
that's amazing. I mean, we're very proud of this film. So, you know, and so is I think it's great that he's still perfecting it, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that film right now is kind of making its way around the festival circuit, right?
Yeah. So as of now, are we in February? We're in February, right? Yeah. So still going around. It will be in a few more festivals in April and in maybe in May. But then there were going to be kind of like a little national screening in mid-April at a theater chain, which I cannot reveal yet. So, but yeah.
So it's
and it was like, I mentioned before, I still hope that we can show in Hong Kong, because Hong Kong is where it all got started. You know, most of the talent that we interviewed were from Hong Kong. We did, you know, and so we always felt that we should at least do one show in Hong Kong. So
yeah, that'd be great.
That'd
be great. And then we're thinking, I think I saw Severin announced it's, we're thinking it's probably sometime like late spring, early summer that the Bruceploitation box set will come out that this will be a part of?
Yes, volume one, yeah.
So that's great. Yeah, volume one.
Volume one, yeah. So you'll have a documentary plus a bunch of films, yeah.
That's great. So that's great. Oh,
yeah.
Frank, I could talk to you about this stuff for hours, but not keeping you that long. Again, as the clone Enter the Clones of Bruce Lee starts making its way around festivals.
Actually, there's no Lee. It's just Enter the Clones of Bruce.
Enter the Clones of Bruce. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we took out the Lee. So it just Enter the Clones of Bruce. Yeah.
Excellent.
We don't want to upset Shannon. So.
Oh, that's true. That's smart. Smart. This is why you're a producer now.
So yeah, right.
I've got the good plans. So yeah, we'll make sure that we share that. Please keep your eyes out as well. Make sure you're following like Severin Films and all that, so you get that news. Frank, for our listeners, if they want to follow you on social media, where's the best place for them to do that?
Wow. I would say Instagram. Yeah, just look for me on Instagram. I'm easy to find because my last name is kind of unique. So. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And as we see any news of, the film either going around tours on any of the national chains or the physical release, we'll make sure we share that too. So Frank, again, thank you so much for talking with us. It's been a pleasure. Again, feel like I've known you because I've heard your voice so much. It's great to really talk to you. Thank you for sharing all this stuff. You have a great night, Frank.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Until next time, take care and bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchroom Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.